We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies, Mr. Beale. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
Go on without me. Just go!
A good soldier never leaves a man behind.
Because I wouldn't give you 2 cents for all your fancy rules if behind them they didn't have a little bit of plain, ordinary, everyday kindness.
Life, finds a way.
Welcome to Silver Screen Biases. Each week, we pick a movie off of IMDb's Top 250 and dig into it. We're examining truth claims in critically acclaimed movies while also examining our own biases. I'm Nelson.
This is Jeff.
And this week, Kirk Cameron's Aliens.
Yes. The Way of the Master. Aliens. No, James Cameron.
Avatar.
Yes, the Avatar prequel.
The Avatar prequel, Aliens.
Yes. It's the sequel to Terminator.
Yeah.
This is the definitive James Cameron trilogy.
Yeah.
With the spinoff film, The Titanic.
Right.
That came after this, where aliens sunk a big ship.
Yeah.
That was captained by a man who couldn't be terminated and a bunch of blue guys.
Yeah.
Also known as Seaman. Because it's a boat. Mm-hmm. Anyways, 1986. Aliens. This is a sequel.
This is a sequel.
We haven't done too many sequels on our show.
Return of the Jedi.
Oh, that's true.
This is the Godfather third. Part 2.
And then this. Yeah.
Are those the only sequels we've done?
Yeah, and there's not a lot.
And this is the first sequel that we didn't do immediately after the movie that preceded it.
That's correct. Yeah. Because neither of us really liked the first one. We weren't eager to
No, I needed a year off from the Alien franchise before I could return to it.
Yeah. Was this your first viewing of this movie?
It's likely my last.
Interesting. I have comments on that. So yeah, 1986, 2 hours and 17 minutes.
Sure is. I felt every minute of it.
James Cameron rated R.
Well,
no, James Cameron's
we
not
watched
rated
R. The director's cut, which is
that's
longer.
That's right. By 20 minutes,
yeah.
I believe there's, yeah.
One of James Cameron's friends said of the director's cut, it's like 40 miles of a bad road.
maybe. It's our first James Cameron film.
Yeah.
And now Terminator 2.
Yeah. And the Terminator.
And the third Terminator. Okay.
No. The Terminator. And Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Both of those
in the top 250.
Okay. I knew the second
Titanic
one was.
Is not. Avatar is.
Avatar's not?
That's surprising.
No, I was grateful for it because I hated that movie.
Yeah. I think it. James Cameron's overrated.
Yeah, I agree.
He's no Kubrick.
No. Easy.
And we even have mixed emotions on Kubrick.
I've got Kubrick films above James Cameron's.
Yeah.
So I guess that does play into what you're saying. Yes. this movie was rated R. I have just underneath this. Was the first one and or this one based on any sort of literature? Just get this out of the way. I didn't think so. Short story, no written novel. I didn't think so. Should I get into the stats or do you want to just... how you doing, Nelson? How's your week?
Pretty good. So I don't know if the audience could hear it in my voice last week, but I was fighting off a cold. The day following recording, I had to take off work.
Oh, did you?
The day after that as well. And I didn't want those days to go to a complete waste. I've had this creative project. I'm not ready to announce what it is yet, but there's a creative project I have that's been on the back burner. It's been on the back burner for months just because I'm busy.
Yeah.
And being homesick, and I was like, well, I'm going to make some use of my time. I'm not just going to sit here sick. And I got a lot of progress on those done.
That's awesome.
And so that felt really good.
That's great. That's great. Best utilization of downtime.
Yeah. That's
good.
I took The Shining's message to heart.
All work, no play.
Yeah. I sat quietly by myself.
You became a...
Yelled at my wife for a while.
You used to be a dull boy.
Yeah.
But now you're less dull with more accomplishments.
I've got pointy bits.
That's right. Oh, man. We don't talk about this often, but we just, it's just you and me this episode. And in this movie, probably won't be one of our longer episodes. So just get a chance to kind of catch up.
You know, interestingly, the episode The Shining. We didn't know this. We didn't plan this.
Right.
Couldn't have planned it because we had not seen The Shining before.
Correct.
One of the themes in that movie, or one of the fan theories about the themes in the movie,
okay,
is about the death of Native populations.
Yes.
And this Monday, this past Monday, was Indigenous Peoples Day. That was the day that our episode released. Also, Columbus Day, Indigenous Peoples Day, whatever you want to call
Columbus
it.
Columbus was a douchebag.
Doesn't make a difference to me what you want to call it. He wasn't the first one here anyway. Leif Erikson, all the way. And also, Christopher Columbus, for all the things he did, he also made a bunch of really terrible movies.
Some of them are good, though. He did the first Harry Potter.
Yeah, but he did the second Home Alone.
Wait, hold on. Lost in New York City?
Yeah.
Are you about to bag on Lost in New York City?
Yeah.
If this episode ever airs, this is the end of our friendship. Are you serious? You don't like Lost in New York City?
No. The title of the franchise is Home Alone.
Hold on.
And he's not home. And in
he's lost in New York City.
He's not even alone.
You talking about the bird lady?
And future President Donald Trump.
That's true. The real savior of that story.
That's right.
Rest in peace.
If he's dead within the next 2 weeks, oh boy.
We're like the Simpsons. We're prophetic weekly entertainment.
So yeah, that was not a plan of ours. No, it was not a plan of ours to release an episode discussing some of the atrocities that happened to the native populations of North America on that day. It just happened that way. And I didn't even notice it until like late in the day.
Oh. What?
But actually, that kind of leads into another thing we were going to talk about today.
Yeah. Colonoscopies. I had a colonoscopy once. True story.
Yeah.
And I was really mad that I didn't get to see the pictures afterwards.
Because
they took pictures.
Yeah.
They were documenting my intestines, my intestines. And afterwards, I come to, and one of the first things I say was like, can I see it? And I was still pretty loopy. It was also when I found out I really loved Lorna Doone cookies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Those cookies changed my life.
Uh-huh.
If any fans out there would love to send us gifts for this holiday season, Lorna Doone cookies are the way to my soul. Not gun control. But
send us guns.
Send us guns.
And Lorna Doone cookies.
That's right. I was really surprised at how quickly they're like, oh, no, we don't do that. I'm like, I'm literally paying you for this.
Yeah.
Let me see the inside of my stomach.
This photo shoot wasn't for your enjoyment. I want these photos.
And the work I put in before this photo shoot for sure was not for anyone's enjoyment. Anyways. But yeah, we were talking before we start the microphones recording here. Just kind of you and I catching up and stuff. And I had mentioned that I'm in a book right now. And it also kind of fits in with what you're talking about with Columbus Day and stuff and Indigenous People Day.
I hate the name Indigenous People's Day. It's so clunky.
I like it better, though, than Columbus Day. Columbus never stood foot in North America.
Irrelevant to me.
Right.
In this Columbus is a hero. That's from Sopranos.
I've never seen Sopranos. So just, I get why the name changed.
Yeah, but it's a clunky name. It's no good.
We'll come up with something. We'll solve that.
Yeah.
You and me, we'll solve that.
But we've so many other problems.
Yeah, it's true. Have we? We're like the end of Ahsoka. We make more questions than answers.
Yeah.
Some of you listeners may know that I'm currently and slowly trying to read through the North American history via books, and specifically
via U.S. history. Not, you don't care about Canada. You're reading biographies of the presidents.
Canada's mentioned a couple times. The French and Indian War.
Spoiler, it still exists.
Right. And Britain won Canada. They lost. Oh. They lost the United States, but they won Canada.
I think Britain won. Canada won. I think it's a tie.
But anyway, I'm reading through American history, taking my time.
You're working your way through biographies of the presidents,
right? And so right now, I'm just out of the founding father stage, and I'm in the pre Civil War stage. So I'm in between. I'm in between there. It's actually been a couple. I'm actually in the Percy Jackson series right now. So it's been a while since I've read a biography.
Yeah, that's not history, though.
No. Well, it's not our history. Greek and Roman history. Anyways, I'm currently reading. It's a book called An Indigenous People's History of the United States by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz.
Link below.
And I was just telling Nelson before, like, I'm really enjoying it. And it's not a Christian author. It's not a Christian book by any means. But in the early chapters on it discusses just this idea of how when the Puritans came over from Europe and stuff to, you know, settle in Jamestown and stuff. And you know, it went into a, there was a couple chapters or segments based on this whole idea of like the, essentially that was the origin of white supremacy, white power. According to the book, like it's just fascinating. Cause like a lot of times, like, cause these Puritans were, if anything, pure hearted, like they had their own ulterior motives and they immediately started, you know, like land, you know, fear mongering, removing people from their land and stuff. Like they were not peaceful by any means.
So I was going to ask you, what are the biases of this author and does it give the Puritans a fair shake? Not to say that they are pure as the driven snow by any means. But I think already I've got my answer. No, she does not.
This author is Native American.
That last name doesn't sound Native American at all.
Well, she's married.
Roxanne.
That's her first
Dunbar
name.
Ortiz.
But hold on, hold on. My mother was part Indian, most likely Cherokee, born in Joplin, Missouri. And father was Scots-Irish. Scots-Irish. So she's, half a quarter Indian.
No, no.
But she.
My mother was part.
Your mother didn't write a book. I'm not talking about your mother's book right now.
She said, my mother was part Indian, likely Cherokee.
Yes.
In my experience.
Is that not enough to claim Indian heritage?
That's not what I said.
Oh, well, I was just trying to put words in your mouth.
you're bad at it, Jeff.
I'm so bad at it.
In my experience, people that can't tell you precisely what percent they are and exactly what tribe they are, it basically doesn't count anymore.
There are some discrepancies in here only because her mother died at a young age and she was an orphan for most of her childhood.
Right.
So like she doesn't have the paper trail.
She's trying to rediscover her heritage.
Right. But she's a professor. Thing. Hold on. She was raised in a Osage Nation on a cattle ranch, but she was in Indian territory. She teaches Nate this stuff now. So she's now a professor in Native American indigenous history and stuff like that. I wasn't prepared to give a summary of this.
No, that's fine.
But
so here's my frustration with.
She is biased.
Oh, very. All right.
Against Puritans.
Because
but
anybody
in
saying,
a convincing way.
Anybody saying that white supremacy started in 1619, for example, as I can't remember her name, claims. Or that it starts when the Puritans arrive and oppress the natives. Like, I'm sorry, that's ignorant of history. Europeans were white supremacists before that.
We're talking about American history. That was the first introduction that's documented on to be U.S. territory.
That's not even true.
We have earlier documented.
Yeah, Spaniards were here before that.
They don't count.
So, and Spaniards were white Europeans, and they also oppressed natives. In fact, they were
Spaniards weren't dark skinned, like
no,
Hispanic
like olive. Ooh, Hispanic? No. What you're thinking of Hispanic, like brown people? That's because they bred in with the natives there.
But Spaniards
are from
white?
Spain. Yeah,
I
are
know
white
where Spaniards are. From.
They still are white. Huh. In fact,
well,
and here's the other thing that's often omitted from American understanding of colonial history: the Spaniards were way more barbaric in how they handled colonialism. Their death rate of native populations was way, way worse and condemned by all the other colonies, even though the other colonies were also engaging in these barbaric practices. I say that because when people say, oh, you know, Columbus was a saint and all that stuff. No, you're wrong too, right? But people are like that talk about slavery or racism as a uniquely white thing. Like, okay, that just doesn't stand up to any kind of scrutiny.
Right. So, dude, to finish what I was saying.
I get frustrated with those, with both of those sides.
This whole book is not filled with hatred and stuff, but it was just starting out. I was talking about just this initial, like, how this purge of Indians started and stuff. And it didn't start with Thomas Jefferson. It started way before that. It referenced the scripture, washed white as snow. And scriptures like that were used as kind of fuel to their fire to. Okay. This is just the book. I'm enjoying the read, but I'm just telling you where I'm at right now, what's going on with it. The subject of their justification for the genocide, for the killing was able to be put on that Puritan label because of biblical or Protestant. I'm doing air quotes for the people who can't see that label to justify it. So I just found that interesting. I too do read a bias in this.
Yeah.
But
I would encourage you,
Doesn't mean there's not truth in it. And that does I am sick of hearing and reading all these books about how we're founded on a biblical nation. We're founded on love. We're founded on peace. We're founded on freedom. When no, we did steal a lot of land. We did kill a lot of people, maybe not by the end of a knife or by the end of a gun, but we did by removing people, by pushing people out, displacing them. We did kill a lot of culture because of our expansion. So like, it's nice to hear it in a more vibrant way versus just going, we did some not so good things, but we're here now and we're better for it. Like, a lot of times it's downplayed. In this book, I would rather it be a little bit more brutal than sometimes people watering down it.
Yeah.
Again, I can't fact check any of it. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying this just more in a pessimistic way. I'm enjoying this more just brutal reinterpretation of how we did take the land of North America.
But here's the other thing, right? I agree with you. The whitewashing of history, I find despicable.
It's pathetic.
It's despicable. It's equally despicable is dishonest history of any kind, right?
Right.
And when you make out the colonialists to be absolute villains, that's not honest to history either, right? If you read the colonialists in their own words, because they wrote a ton, they were a very literate group, you can hear right from their own mouths how they thought about the native people. And it's very different than the revisionist historians would tell you. It's also very different than the ones saying that we're a Christian nation found on, as you said, love, peace, and freedom. When people say that we were founded on religious liberties, well, if you read the Puritans in their own words, that's not true either. They wanted religious freedom for themselves, and that's why they came here, but they didn't want religious freedom within their colony, right? Right. Like, you couldn't have a dissenting opinion. It's not true that we stole land exclusively. And a lot of the time you'll see this is stolen land. That's very often the case, not true. The difference is that the East Coast Native Americans had a different understanding of property rights than the European settlers did. In the Europeans' mind, they were purchasing land. I'm about halfway through a book right now called The Not So Wild Wild West, and it really focuses more on European Native interactions west of the Mississippi, but it talks about some of those same things that carried on before that, because these are very different periods of history, Western frontier and Eastern frontier. And Native Americans absolutely had property rights. Okay. When there are people that talk
squatters, I mean, they were here way before us.
Well,
they shouldn't even have to fight to protect it or like defend it.
No, you're misunderstanding me. They had a concept of property rights.
Yeah.
A lot of people, especially from more her camp, talk about the Native Americans as being like these noble savages who shared everything in common. That's not true either. That's a racist history, because the Natives absolutely understood property rights. They absolutely had property rights, but property rights really only show up when there's scarcity. And there wasn't a scarcity of land. In Europe, there was scarcity of land.
Right.
And so the Europeans had an understanding of land property rights that the Native Americans didn't share. But the Native Americans had understanding of hunting ground property rights, fishing run property rights, different forageable area property rights. Like, they understood that. They also had an understanding of personal versus tribal property.
Right.
Okay.
All of which is different than what the Europeans did.
It's all still property. It's just different context of property. Manhattan, for example, was purchased for about $20. It's worth a lot more than that today, but it was purchased for about $20.
Somewhat.
It wasn't stolen. There are, in a lot of documented cases, where there was land outright stolen. The Oklahoma Sooners, for example. This was made possible by standing armies left over the Mexican-American War, standing armies left over after the Civil War, standing armies created by the British government, right? I'm not saying that none of that's true, but it is inaccurate and dishonest to say, with a broad brush, that all of the land was stolen.
I didn't say all that.
I know, but people like her would make these cases.
Easy. You haven't read the book.
I don't.
Just from the inaccurate name and my description, you're already assuming that you know the outcome of this book.
I'm assuming she is not providing a nuanced history. Now,
she's doing 400 years in 200 pages. Like, it's got to be pretty quick.
Well, on the topic of nuanced histories, I actually just finished reading, because we're talking about books we're reading.
Yeah.
I just finished reading Thomas Sowell. He's a brilliant black economist. He's in his 90s. He just published a new book last month, and I just listened to it. Thomas Sowell's Social Justice Fallacies, also linked below. And he really kind of deconstructs a lot of the arguments the social justice left, really shows how government involvement has slowed the Black community from really empowering themselves, which they were doing before government involvement. He does an incredible job of it too. Really brings his facts and figures, not a wasted page. Strongly recommend it. And having finished that, I started on Conceived in Liberty. You're reading right now about Native American European interactions from the European discovery of America.
Correct. This will go through, I think it goes to modern day.
Okay. Because you said 400 years.
Yeah. So she goes to, I think, current. I'm not there yet, so I can't say for sure. Okay. So her conclusion is the future of the United States. So she goes into current status and where she perceives it's heading as far as their land that they currently have, their reservations and stuff, going with that. She talks about acreage, how tribes and stuff would have went from so many acres down to square.
Yeah.
Which it's disheartening. Whether they were coerced into it, whether they got money for it, it's just frustrating.
No, she's absolutely right that reservations have been dramatically shrunk.
Cultures have been lost.
And one of the key factors there in the shrinking of native lands and reservations is the U.S. federal government's Indian Bureau, which has done a disgusting job of not serving the community that they're intended to serve.
I probably agree with that. Everything comes with the
You're
bonds.
Talking about 200 pages to cover 400 years. On the other end of that spectrum, I'm reading Conceived in Liberty by Murray Rothbard. It's five-volume narrative on the U.S. history from pre-colonial period through to the American Revolution. It's about 1,700 pages. So he does, in my opinion, an incredible job of taking a very nuanced, this is what they did, this is what they did, this is why this was wrong, this is why this was wrong, this is why this was good, this is why this was good. He doesn't lionize anybody. He just very matter-of-fact language. This is what they did. That was pretty messed up. This is what they did. That was pretty messed up. This is how we can contextualize that and understand that in the modern context. One of the big things he said while talking about the European native relations that I saw a lot in the Not So Wild Wild West that I was reading, and we're also seeing the Israel-Palestine conflict, which is in a conflict of cultures, the culture with more firepower tends to flippantly say about their own atrocities, it's just one of those things. But then take very, very, very seriously those same atrocities against them. That's much more true about the interactions between Europeans and natives.
You wouldn't say that about the Americans if we had the more firepower?
No, I absolutely would. I do. Okay. And I do.
Okay.
But as far as Israel-Palestine conflict is concerned, Americans are funding both sides of that. So we really don't have a leg to stand on. As far as everything leading up to what happened over the last weekend, if you look at the history of Israel-Palestine, there has been a long history, unfortunately, of Israel saying, well, it's just one of those things. But Conceived in Liberty by Murray Rothbard, it's 1,700 pages. I'm listening to it because I'm illiterate. It's 80 hours. And here's something that's really interesting. The fifth volume of Conceived in Liberty was lost for a very long time, because Murray Rothbard died before he finished it. Patrick Newman.
The salad dressing guy.
Yeah. No. He wrote a really terrific book about the history of cronyism, a history of liberty and power in America from X year to X year. Terrific book. Strongly recommend it. He finished, I don't know if that's the right word. He edited and compiled the fifth volume. So now it's available. So the audiobook I'm listening to, I think it's just the first four, and I'll have to do the fifth one separate. But Conceived in Liberty by Murray Rothbard, if you want to understand in greater detail than you've ever understood the powers at play in this time, not 5 minutes goes by while I'm listening to this that I don't learn something new and think, wow, that makes sense. That explains so much. So it's phenomenal. But I'm also really interested to read your Marxist book about the noble communist savages of the Upper East Coast.
I think you heard the title wrong.
Yeah, but I bet that if I read it, I'll find that I was right.
An American History Through the Eyes of Karl Marx. Wait. Ah, crap.
Oh, wait a second.
Shoot. That's on me.
Yeah, so all the bugs talked about so far linked below. Yeah. Check those out. When you purchase through those links on Amazon, we get a kickback. That really helps us build the vision we have of this podcast. Speaking of building the vision we have for this podcast, we have a Patreon. It's $5 a month. With that, there's a lot of perks that come. You're going to see some of those later in the show, some of those perks. One of those perks is that you get access to our monthly Patreon-only show.
Off 250.
We'll be covering movies that have never been on the IMDb Top 250 and likely never will be. Our first episode was Godfather Part 3.
Yes, we finished the trilogy.
That's right. And this Friday, we will release our second Off 250.
It's a biography.
That's right. It is my all-time Trump, favorite movie, The Jerk.
Just kidding. Yeah, Steve Martin, The Jerk.
I watch it at least once a year.
First movie, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah. I've not watched it yet as of recording this.
So I know you're watching it tomorrow, and I'm so excited.
I'm excited to jump into it, yes.
So excited. I love that movie.
Yeah, so that's going to be our Off 250 for the month of October.
That's right.
And plenty more to come through with that. And at the turn of the year, you as the Patreons will decide the movie that we discuss.
Starting
in January, yeah. So if you want to have a say in what movies we talk about
Off
250, now's your chance. You'll have an opportunity to pitch movies and vote on the ones that will go into play every month from month to month. So yeah, if you want more of a say of what you hear on this show, that's an opportunity. And also, we do interactive questions, we do some polls and stuff on the Patreon.
We ask your opinion on episodes that are going to air. We're going to touch on that later in this episode.
Okay, so yeah, I knew we touched on someone.
But
something.
We touched someone.
Got touched. And we have merch. We will in the future do exclusive merch through for the Patreon members. You'll get first dibs at tickets for events when they come. Lots of cool things through the Patreon that will open up some opportunities for this podcast. We would love for you to join us in this journey and help us grow this podcast.
That's right. And then, of course, if you're not in a place, we understand that the economy is in a lousy spot right now. So if you're not in a place...
Not for anything we've done, though. Nelson and Jeff have done our best
to
make the economy as good as we can.
You know, if $5 a month for those community perks is outside your budget, I understand that. Just share our podcast with your friends. That goes a huge way to help us grow this.
Yeah, that would be huge. Yeah.
But let's talk about the movie.
The movie, yes.
Aliens.
1986, the sequel. Oh, there's more than two. There's exactly.
Aliens Back in the Habit.
More than two.
Aliens Electric Boogaloo.
Aliens A New Hope. Wait, no, Aliens Rise of
Attack of the Clones.
Ripley.
Mm. Aliens, her first name is Ellen.
Yes. Aliens. Hey, that's the dude from Twister.
Yeah, Bill Paxton.
Bill Paxton.
Man, he was insufferable.
He was. Some time had passed between this movie and Twister because he was quite the looker in this movie. I didn't think he was much of a stunner in Twister.
So what I know Bill Paxton from, because I recognize him, I couldn't place it. I watched Mighty Joe Young with the kids earlier this year.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, he's the stud in that movie.
I haven't seen that movie in years.
Apparently he's also in Titanic.
Yes, he is. Yes. Along with Joe from The Office. Aliens 1986, 2 hours 17 minutes is the standard cut. We watched the extended version. James Cameron rated R, 8.4 on IMDb. It currently stands at number 68 in the top 250.
So it debuted at 34, hit 97 in 2001, returned to 53 ahead of Predators. If you remember, Alien versus Predator.
Predators was on the top 250?
No. It returned to 53 ahead of the release of the movie Predators.
Okay.
Because it seems to get a boost every time a new Alien or Predator movie comes out. It jumps
that
up.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So.
Have you seen any of the Predator movies? They recently did one.
Prey.
And it was, and going back to our common denominator here for the episode, that they took that movie back to indigenous peoples, like pre-colonialization of Americans.
Yeah.
Like, and so I'm very intrigued by that now that I've into this universe a little bit more in this world that they're setting. But
there's an Assassin's Creed game that takes place. It might not be Far Cry Primal. and okay. you play a Native American
really?
Hunting mammoth, all that kind I'm of stuff. I'm not
playing
great.
The Far Cry's. Okay, so yeah, so that was the history on the IMDb. Rotten Tomatoes, 98%.
Yeah.
And 94% audience.
Yeah.
You got that budget for us?
Yes. Yes.
In American dollars, not alien Ooh. Nostromos. Nostromo's dollar bills, digital
currencies. I have it in titanium coins.
Titanium coins.
$18.5 million US dollars in 1986.
Wow.
Which would be roughly $52 million today.
That's low.
Which is $5.5 million more than the first Alien. So they did, like, usually
wow.
when you have a successful first movie and you make a sequel, the budget often doubles.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Fox didn't believe in the first movie. They thought it was a fluke. They didn't want to really do a second movie.
Correct.
So that's a big reason why the budget is the way it is.
That's fascinating.
And in fact, 1 whole million of that $18.5 million was just for Sigourney Weaver to get her to come back. Sigourney Weaver was like the last person to sign on to the movie. She didn't want to do it. She agreed with three stipulations.
Ridley Scott was supposed to direct it again, right? He was originally attached to
that
the
might
second have, one.
That might be true. Mm-hmm. She agreed to come back on three conditions. One, no guns. No guns in the movie at all, because she's strongly anti-gun. So no guns in the movie.
She fooled me.
Two, she has to have sex with an alien. Three, she has to die at the end.
They didn't meet any of those.
They
well,
James Cameron successfully negotiated out
this,
all
the sex
three of
part,
those.
The sex part will come up later because this movie but and then, the previous one is very sexual.
Alien Resurrection, which is the one that comes fourth in the franchise.
Right, because there's series. Aliens 3.
Apparently, she got all three of her wishes on that.
No guns.
No guns.
She had sex with
she
an
has
alien.
She has sex with an alien. She dies at the end. Dies. It's supposed to be a terrible movie.
I'll probably find myself watching these throughout the rest of my adulthood, because I'll get to my opinions here in a sec.
Yeah.
But lots of practical effects again. So, like, that's...
Yeah,
that's
I don't think
really,
they look as good.
Not some of the space scenes, but, like, the actual spaceship... Like almost like the Doom game scenes where you're looking like for that guy. Like those scenes looked really good.
There's a couple things with the xenomorphs where like an explosion was behind them or something, and like you could see through them in ways where like if it was all in black,
you saw more xenomorphs in this movie than you did the first.
Well, not even just that, like you could where like their mouth was open, a light comes up behind, and you can see through the jaw, which really gave away that it's a puppet.
I didn't catch that. I didn't catch that.
There's a lot of stuff like that where I was just like, come on.
There's only a couple times where I thought, okay, it's a little wonky. There was a couple spaceship scenes where like the small ship is flying into the big one.
Yeah.
That looked really bad.
That was green screening and that was 1980s quality green screening.
Then the only other scene in this movie, and so, okay, and I guess I want a precursor to this. My opinion of this film is more optimistic than the last one.
Going into this one, I was like, okay, both of these movies are in the top 250.
Why?
Maybe this one redeems it.
Yeah.
Maybe this one will explain why it's there. This is such a beloved franchise. Maybe this really helps me understand. I think it was Hunter when he was on for The Thing that said, you know, he likes it almost more. So I went in optimistic.
Still didn't leave satisfied.
Man. About halfway through, I was like, if it had not been that we were covering it for a show,
you would turn it off.
I would not have finished this movie.
Interesting. The only other scene that had me disappointed was that whole last scene where she's fighting in this like mechanical suit.
Yeah, I wrote here the best thing about being forklift certified is that I'm qualified to fight as a matriarch.
Because like up until that site that uniform, her robotic structure or whatever, I loved the scene where she had Newt, she was holding Newt and she stumbled across the eggs.
Yeah.
Like it went silence. It went, you know, instead of screaming, instead of the sounds of the machine, it just went silent. And she just slowly turned, realizing, I loved that scene. Hook, line, and sinker, like, that scene got me.
Yeah,
It wasn't horrifying. I wasn't, like, scared and hiding behind a pillow, but I was entertained, and I was believing the sheer horror of what was being discovered as she realized she's in a nursery of eggs. I loved that moment. That scene, and then the scene where Newt's in the water, the xenomorph comes up out of the water.
I
thought that was a well shot scene. It looked it looked good. That scene aged well.
I struggled really hard to care about any of these characters.
What?
Yeah. In fact,
yeah, I don't think you went in
when
giving this movie a chance.
No, I really wanted to like it. I really wanted to like it. But I, like, it was a part where I was like, yeah, Newt, I don't care if you die. I don't care.
I didn't know if they actually would, too. I'm like, did they?
With the xenomorph rising out of the water, I was like, Newt would be dead already.
Well, okay, so...
I found it a lot unbelievable.
Some of my comments and critiques, and I think one of the reasons why I have a better opinion about this movie and in these two movies back-to-back now is I want to reference... For my research, I was watching Eric Voss's New Rock Stars. Well, it's the Deep Dive channel. I just want to reference that he did...
Linked below.
Two deep dives, one of Alien and one of Aliens. Not to copyright or take from that.
Also but, linked below.
But his breakdowns were very informative. And some of the things I will bring up, and I will mention his name again just to make sure I'm crediting where credit's due. He really shed to light some of these themes that I missed and made it more enjoyable and stuff. I enjoyed those scenes. I enjoyed this story more. I thought the storyline was dumb.
Yeah.
Like, just the whole premise of, like, just go home. Just let it go. This company is obviously corrupt. We found out in the first one that this company was intentionally trying to bring one back, and they were trying to weapon, like, they're going to do it again. and in fact, they did do it again. And yeah. The only reason I think that, and this is coming from Eric Voss's analyzation, but, like, the only reason where I think they wanted Ripley to go on this trip again was their hopes that she would die, and then there'd be no one to say that, hey, we talked against this when they do come back. And they,
that's right.
There was a lot of those themes, and I'm like, the aliens are not the villains. Just like in Walking Dead, the walkers, the zombies are not the villains in that whole series.
No, it's the other people trying
to survive, creating these different worlds of structure and government that combat. So I just found that interesting.
You know, we're more so in the first one. When we eventually get to Jurassic Park,
to the Walking Dead.
That's coming up later this year. There's a similar theme in Jurassic Park, where the dinosaurs aren't the villains.
No.
Humans are the villains.
Yeah.
Hubris is the villain.
Yeah.
And
specifically,
the character
from Seinfeld.
Newman. I recently watched through the entire Jurassic Park franchise with my kids.
All six?
All six.
Okay.
The comparisons between Jurassic Park 2 and this, huge.
I haven't seen Jurassic Park 2 in a long time, so I don't recall any memories.
You know, you're the survivor, and you have to go back to protect that guy, even though you don't want to go back, and now you're going back.
And that's
and
the one
also,
with
we're
Jeff
all
Goldblum,
there because
right?
of hubris.
Jeff Goldblum's yeah. the...
Also, Jurassic Park 3, same thing again, except this time it's the other survivors from Jurassic Park, and I know you don't want to go back, but you got to go back, because we need your help. But also, we're here because of hubris, but...
In the end, it's the same story. Like, and this is one of my negative reviews, like, they wake up in a cocoon, and the movie ends with them going back into a sleep in a cocoon.
Yeah.
This movie solved nothing.
No.
It ended the same way it began.
I will say...
Except 57 years older.
James Cameron...
She hadn't aged a day.
Well, she had aged 4 years.
Well, that's...
James Cameron did do a good job of mirroring the first, but I feel like that mirroring was really heavy-handed and obvious. One thing that they did that wasn't mirroring, like, because the first one's a lot about inception and pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Conception and pregnancy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This one's about motherhood.
Correct.
It still just didn't land.
Which is because you're an anti-feminist.
That is true.
Yeah. I don't think I liked the first one any better, but I liked this one better than this first one. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed myself with this movie. I liked it less. The premise I thought was dumb. Like, we shouldn't be doing this again. Why would you go with kids in your... They had kids in your car, and you're driving to unknown territory where there's potential danger on a planet that you're trying to terraform. Like, the whole premise I can't get behind.
I want
to... But the action scenes, the dialogue of the characters, I enjoyed.
Let me defend the narrative.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
They've colonized this planet. They've been there 20 years. They had no idea.
The auction believable or they, breathable.
Nobody knew that this planet was dangerous.
Right.
This couple with their kids is just going to check out a thing. They have no reason to believe it would be dangerous. None at all.
Okay. Did you, totally unrelated to like the themes and heaviness of this movie, but like from a movie we just recently did to this movie, did you notice any like almost identical scene specifically? I thought of it the moment I saw it. The kid on the tricycle at the beginning.
Oh yeah. In The Shining.
The very first time, like,
I was like, yeah, that's interesting.
Where's the twins? Like,
yeah.
There was a kid on a tricycle going down a long runway.
He's biking towards the camera instead of away from it.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah.
Yeah. So one thing that I thought was really interesting with the first movie, and this is going back a year now, so it's from memory. I didn't re-listen.
I watched a recap, but I have not watched the first
one. Yeah, I didn't re-watch. I didn't re-listen to our episode on it. But I do remember the first one being really interesting, talking about, you know, honoring contracts, contract law, protection of rights and property and a lot of that. And that does come up again in this movie. So props to James Cameron there. I believe he worked on the script. One of the early lines in the movie when they find her body. Bio readouts are all in green. Looks like she's alive. Well, there goes our salvage guys.
Yep.
They've lost their salvage rights because there is a surviving person.
Yeah. These guys just wanted to scrap out the ship and make money.
Right. Which totally reasonable.
Yeah. They had no reason to expect there was life on it.
That's right.
Well, I don't know. If you're absorbing a spaceship, you have to assume that there had once been and there could be. Like,
yeah, I no, mean, but I like, would that's I would, just the risk that comes with being a salvage right, guy.
That's true.
Right. And then, of course, there's the big point of the guys going out to find this spot. They want to make sure that they have property rights on it. And the guy's like, as far as I know, they do. And then, again, one of the big reasons that what's his name? He was lying about. He was the one that said, hey, go check this out. Because if he had raised a security check on it, it would have gotten the administration involved. And there goes the property rights. This movie, the villain really is this one corporate guy. And also, he flat out lies to Ripley, right? Ripley's like, if we're going, it's an extermination mission, not a scientific thing. And he's like, no, he's like, yes, of course. But for him, it's like, do you see how much money we could make on this?
Nelson?
Yeah.
We still have not talked about the elephant in the room. The peanut gallery, Nelson. We have a peanut gallery now.
That's right.
We have the ability through our Patreon for you guys to have a voice on every episode. Tell us a little bit more about this and how can people get involved and what do they have to say currently?
Yeah. So the Friday before we record an episode, we put out a poll on our Patreon, which says, hey, we're talking about X movie next week. Is it in your top 250? And also comment below if you have any thoughts on it. So this particular week, we have no comments from the peanut gallery, but we do have poll results. 100% at the time of recording, 100% of people polled said no. It's not in their top 250.
Aliens.
Aliens.
Okay, fair enough. Good to know. Okay.
But we will be reading those comments if they're sufficiently thought-provoking in the future. Because, you know, Jeff and I, we get observations when we have guests. We find that oftentimes they bring things that we never thought of. And we wanted to open that up to our audience as well.
Gives us more opportunities for it, not just to be Nelson and Jeff's voice in your ear. Well, it'd be our voice speaking the comments.
But Reading your voice. Our voice reading
your We will your use different impressions for every voice.
Yes.
Images you win. Okay. Anyways, that was horrible.
Those are the two voices you look at.
That was it. Both one inaudible, two annoying. Overall, Nelson, disappointed with the movie. I came out optimistically enjoying it. Still not high on my list. I liked it better than the first one, but I'm not ranting and raving about it outside of just... Yeah, I liked it better.
Look, I know from when we did The Shining, you said it's unlikely that any of the Kubrick movies will make your top 250. And you've already said that this movie has Kubrick movies ranked ahead of it. And so I can conclude this will not be in your
top 250. I think the reason I'm just so happy about it is it's nice to see something in a franchise. Like I was now expecting
it because I watched the
first
guy.
One. Yeah. Because I watched the first one and it was terrible.
Yeah.
In my opinion. I was assuming this one was going to be just the same. And I'm just glad. So I have this one.
Hold on real quick. I know you're a franchise guy. So let's talk about this franchise.
Yes.
Because as we've already commented, there's actually two franchises mixed together to make this franchise.
Well,
Alien.
There will be.
And Predator.
Predator. They did not cross over at this point. So right now, Aliens was a standalone.
Well.
And was there a Predator movie out at this point?
No, there wasn't.
Because I don't know any of
this. But let's talk about chronology.
Okay.
So the Alien franchise and the Predator franchise eventually mix with Alien vs. Predator in 2004. That's okay. when they officially cross.
Okay.
But because they cross, then all the movies that came out in the Predator franchise before Alien vs. Predator are now part of the franchise.
Prequels of...
So here's the entire franchise in continuity.
How many movies? Before you start listening, how many movies total are there?
I don't know.
Unbelievable.
But there's going to be some surprises in here. So the very first one, Prey.
Chronologically,
Prey. In 2022's Prey. Then Predator. Predator 2. Alien versus Predator. Alien versus Predator Requiem. The Predator from 2018. Predators, 2010. Blade Runner 1982.
Wait, what?
So we will be returning to this franchise in the top 250.
That's legitimately in the same universe.
Correct.
100%.
Yes.
Like, it's not just like, oh, they share a same can of pop that's in one of the scenes.
No. Nope.
So they're referenced?
Blade Runner came out between Alien and Aliens.
Okay.
And in Ridley Scott's opinion, this story, Blade Runner, which takes place several hundred years before Alien, in his mind, this is the type of city that when they returned from their mission, they would have visited. The replicants in Blade Runner are the androids of the Alien franchise. Then after Blade Runner, the movie Soldier from 1998, I don't know anything about it. It's made by a different director, but it's made by a director or writer, I can't remember which, that helped with either Alien or Blade Runner, perhaps both. And it references the wars discussed in Blade Runner. Then Blade Runner 2049, Prometheus, which is our first from the actual Alien franchise, Alien Covenant, Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, Alien Resurrection, and then Joss Whedon's Firefly and Serenity.
Those are confirmed.
So
they mention it. Like, there's crossover of something, a character, a word, a continuity of.
Yeah, so.
Like,
so Joss Whedon helped with, I think, Alien Resurrection, but it falls into the Alien universe because it's set in the year 2517, which would be 138 years after Alien Resurrection, 200 years after the rest of the events in the universe. But in the very first episode of Firefly, during a space dogfight, you get a view of the heads-up display of one of the weapons aboard the spaceship Serenity, where you can see the Weyland-Yutani Corporation logo from Alien.
Well, there you go.
There you go. He also worked in Weyland-Yutani into Angel, which was the spinoff of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yep.
So all that's in the same universe. So because of Weyland-Yutani, because of Joss Whedon working that in there, I don't know if you remember this, talking about the Tommy Westfall universe.
You've mentioned
it. Alien, Predator, the Blade Runner franchise all folds into this fictional universe inside the head of an autistic boy at St. Elmo.
Well, then the Blade Runner sequel would obviously be a part of this then too.
Yeah, Blade Runner 2047, I think I might have missed
2049. It. 2049.
Yeah, sorry, I might have mentioned it. That falls in between Soldier and Prometheus. So, you're a franchise guy, I know. I bet by some Tommy Westfall connection, Harry Potter probably falls in. Hannah Montana and iCarly does.
That one, yeah, I can see that one making sense.
So, yeah.
Well, okay. Well, I may have to watch some of these. I've never seen Blade Runner.
Me either.
I've never seen any of the Firefly and Serenity. I've heard people talk about it, but like talk about those, they get almost like Dwight Schrute from The Office when he talks about Battlestar Galactica, mm-hmm. and that's almost a turnoff for him. Mm-hmm. They get super excited about it in an off-putting way, and I'm like,
yeah, I get it.
Like, it's the same people that watch Doctor Who. No offense if you guys watch Doctor Who. But
You're killing me, Smalls.
It's the same category of people. Like, it's a different type of excitement that people show for those specific shows.
Yeah.
And it's weird.
I would say it's no different.
Who's your favorite doctor? You got to start with. I'm like, no. Jeff? Can't.
Jeff, I know you. Intimately. I think it has nothing to do with that. Okay. Because you're that same way about Star Wars. You're that same way about Marvel. What it is it's just one more fandom, and you've already got so many that, because you're a franchise guy, you watch the whole thing. Firefly's a great franchise for you to dip your toe into because it's just one season and a movie. Doctor Who, watch everything up through.
Have you watched all the Doctor? Like, are you?
I stopped at Peter Capaldi. I found him insufferable.
I like David Tennant. Like, I know some of the people who've been in Doctor Who.
Yeah,
but still not enough for me to want to just. I am a franchise guy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to disagree with any of that, but there is.
You said it yourself.
There is something different though about the fans of people who talk about Doctor Who and Firefly versus like someone talking about the Fast and Furious franchise. The way they react,
it would be hilarious. Different. Actually,
like,
it would be hilarious if anybody was as bought into Fast and Furious as anyone is who's bought into Doctor Who.
Like, I'm willing to give anything a try, except Eyes Wide Shut. It's just not going to be anytime soon. I may watch some of these movies here sooner. Blade Runner's in the top 250.
Blade Runner is in the top 250.
No Predator movies.
2049 is. No, none of the Predator is.
Okay, so And no more Aliens movies are in the top 250. So we just have one more movie in this universe that you and I will come back to. I'm intrigued enough to watch more of these, and I may. Now the question is, do I continue to go in order of release, or do I continue, or do I start now going back and watching some more, like the trailer Prey for Prey
is supposed to be incredible.
The trailer for Prey looked really good.
Yeah.
And I don't know anything about the Predator characters. Like,
he's supposed to be the universe's best hunter.
Listeners, I'll keep you updated. Maybe the next time when we talk about Blade Runner, I'll give you an update if I've watched any more of these. But outside of just doing this podcast, because obviously what you and I talk about is very specific to the list we're pulling movies from.
Of course.
The app Letterboxd has really been motivating for me to continue to watch more movies.
Oh, good.
You and I discussed a couple days ago. My wife and I recently watched The Haunted Mansion, the one with Owen Wilson, the most recent version of it. It was great. It was a great movie. Enjoyed it. Very entertaining.
I watched the Muppets one.
I love the
in
Muppets,
May. I watched it after I
in
finished.
May.
The, yeah, I watched it after
it's
a I
weird
finished
season. Easter just finished. I'm going to watch Haunted Mansion.
Actually, I just finished watching Electric Mayhem.
Oh, great!
And
great
I wanted show, to compare it to another Muppets thing because my frustration with Electric Mayhem, not enough Muppets.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I agree with that.
And so I was like, well, am I misremembering the way Muppets is? Maybe I'm being too critical.
No.
So then I was like, I'm going to go watch a Muppets that I haven't seen before.
Oh, okay.
So I watched Muppets Haunted Mansion. And yeah, definitely humans are the minority character in that.
Yeah.
And then I saw the Eddie Murphy one because the DVD came in a box of cereal because it was that much of a flop.
Did you enjoy that one?
I haven't seen it since I saw it as a kid when it came in a box of cereal. But I know that I watched it multiple times. Okay. So
Eddie Murphy's good.
Eddie Murphy's great.
Yeah. And then Muppets. I have not seen either of those, but those, so I'm going to be watching those this fall. I have not seen the Hocus Pocus sequel. So that's on my list to watch. But yeah, but just with the Letterboxd app, which you can find us, they're linked in the below. Follow us.
SSB Jeff and SSB Nelson.
I've been more motivated to watch just more movies for entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
And then talk about it. So I'm really enjoying, between this podcast and that app, I've been really trying to watch more movies.
Yeah.
And logging them in my diary. Anyways, we talked about this sort of already. Aliens, this movie we're talking about, Sigourney Weaver.
She's the only redeeming, well, there's two redeeming qualities of this movie. She's terrific.
And the artificial intelligence character.
And no.
No.
The grime, lived in an environment, worn out armor, really on point.
Yeah. The hallway to her little apartment.
Yeah.
Was trashy. It looked like it was.
Yeah.
Like in an old dilapidated apartment in like a rundown.
It was a believable world.
Yeah.
But what was unbelievable were almost all of the characters.
They were over dramatized.
Paul Reiner was great.
Which one did he?
He was the corporate stooge.
Okay. Yeah.
He's the bad guy in the movie. But the Marines are absolutely insufferable and cartoonish. Like, I couldn't believe a single one of them as a person. None of these people felt real.
Yeah.
This movie felt like a B movie. I don't understand why it's on the top 250.
I've watched Toxic Avenger. This felt nothing like Toxic Avenger.
What did you think of Toxic Avenger?
Oh, boy. I prayed a lot after watching that movie.
Yeah?
Because
I like B movies, but I have to be in the mood for it, and I have to know that's what it is going in.
This, I wouldn't put this in the B. I mean, it's on the top 250. I think you may be the first person to classify this as a B movie. So,
flag in the sand right now. Aliens is a B movie.
There goes our four listeners.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, there goes both of our listeners.
But, so one thing that I don't think we talked about much in from the first movie, and it was doubled down on in this movie, was this idea of mother.
Mother in the first movie was the AI.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the AI was essentially one of the villains.
Yes.
And like more so than the aliens were.
Yes.
Like the mother was trying to, everyone's expendable. We need this creature to bring back with us and no matter what the cost.
Yes.
But there was a lot of imagery, like the directors from both movies and the creators of it have even talked about how like the xenomorph is very phallic shaped. The face, like the idea of the way it reproduces is literally through a rape.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Sigourney Weaver's laying down in her bed and it fades into the image of Earth or a planet, and you see her face on the planet to literally get that image of Mother Earth.
Yeah.
There's motherhood throughout this whole movie. There's eggs. Yep. There's the queen xenomorph that gives
Matriarch. Birth.
She has Newt for almost the whole movie. She loses a daughter at the beginning. Well, she lost a daughter at the beginning of the movie.
Played by her mother.
Yes, the picture is a picture of her mother.
And, real quick comment on that picture. You'd think the future would have higher fidelity printers. It's so grainy.
It's so weird being in a year that's not yet reached where they're at.
Yeah.
And our technology already surpasses what they're at. It is, that is fascinating. But I just, this movie's like, it's motherly, it's parental, it's in a weird way, there's nurturing vibes. But like, at the same time, I don't get a lot of feminism from this. Granted, Sigourney Weaver is the lead, and she's very much very powerful. She's hardcore. She's awesome. But like, whenever people talk about like, oh, feminism in movies, you know, you've got Barbie, you've got everyone gripes about that, the female scene in the Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
Or all the like just stuff like that always gets this ridicule and gets this conversation. Never once has Aliens come up of like, oh, that's a feminist movie.
Do you want to know why?
Yes, I do. What's the difference? In my opinion, this one's way more feminism forward than that scene in Avengers.
I totally agree.
I haven't seen Barbie yet, but that one's definitely feminist forward. But
when people talk about like strong, we need strong female characters and Hollywood doesn't appreciate female characters. And why aren't there more action movies with strong female leads? You will see people say, excuse me, Ellen Ripley, the Alien franchise. But the reason it doesn't count is because it doesn't beat you over the head with the fact that this is a female lead and go girl power and all that stuff. But
all that's true, though.
Because because this movie does it right. This movie
does. What's the difference? Well, how do they do it right?
By not beating your head over it. It's just, hey, here's a believable female character kicking ass. And here's another big factor of it, too. And this is one of the big reasons that I'm so pro gun right. When I see Black Widow run down a hallway and take out a bunch of super jacked security guards, it's not terribly believable to me.
In the whole movie, that's the part that's hard to believe. I get that. I'm glad you explained that. Yeah, because
You know what I mean.
A superhero can't
She's
take
not
down.
A superhero.
She is a superhero. Nope. Black Widow's a superhero.
No.
She's... What have we stumbled upon, Nelson? Black Widow is a superhero.
No, she's not.
Yes, she is.
No, she's a secret agent. Is James Bond a superhero?
In his universe. He's the only one of its kind.
No, you have...
She's an Avenger. That's a superhero. If you're an Avenger, you're a superhero. She is an Avenger.
Oh, so Phil Coulson's a superhero?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
No, he's not.
Nick Fury. Yeah. Maria Hill, no, superhero.
You have to be...
I would 100% agree with
that. You have to be augmented in some way to be a superhero. Augmented.
She had her womanhood taken away.
That's actually, if anything, demented.
That oddly worked. Oddly worked. That is demented, yes. No. She's been augmented.
Listen.
And she has...
Would I win in a fight against Black Widow? Of course not.
Well...
Would Black Widow win in a hallway fight with a dozen trained buff security guards?
Yeah, and she did.
I don't find that as believable.
She did.
Ellen Ripley with superior firepower. I believe that. Guns are an equalizer. Like, is Tony Stark going to win in a hallway fight? No.
He is if he's in his Iron Man suit.
Because the Iron Man suit is what makes him superhero.
So because she knows all these moves, she's got all this training from years and years of trauma and secretive spying, she can't be a superhero. But some guy builds a robot and steps inside like a costume, he's a superhero? That's demented.
No, listen, if a woman had built the Iron Man suit, I'd find that believable. Are you saying that women aren't smart enough to build Iron Man suits, Jeff?
Absolutely. 100%. That's exactly the point I'm trying to get across. I'm just saying, Black Widow is a superhero. She's an Avenger.
Shuri is a much more superhero than Black Widow is.
Right. I'm not saying she's the best superhero.
That's not... No,
saying Black Widow is the best hero. I'm saying she is a superhero. She is in the class of superheroes.
She's not.
She is.
No.
Yes, 100%.
No.
Yes.
She is a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent with Soviet training.
Hawkeye. Superhero?
No.
This hurts. This hits deep, Nelson. You've struck a nerve. Agree for the listeners to disagree and move on because I'm not standing my, I'm not changing my stance.
But all that I'll write you a thesis. That's why Alien franchise is omitted from the conversation about powerful female characters is because
she's believable.
Yes. Because what the feminist culture, like when I say the feminist culture, I mean like
from your experience in feminism.
Yeah.
No, tell us what the feminists believe, Nelson.
Well, they're very vocal about what they believe.
It's true.
They want you to believe that nothing distinguishes male from female as far as competency. And unfortunately, and as unfair as it is, that's just not the truth. You're familiar with bell curves?
I'm familiar with bells.
So the bell curve of female ability and male ability, the 50th percentile is not very far off. Okay? But the bell curve for male competency is a lot wider than female competency. The bell curve for female competency is a lot tighter. What this means is there's less of a difference between the top accomplishing female and the 50th percentile female than there is between the top accomplishing male and the 50th percentile male. But the 50th percentile male and the 50th percentile female, pretty well on top of each other. I was really uncomfortable.
Hopefully they're married.
I was really uncomfortable with this information when I first found it. Because I very much wanted to believe that nothing distinguishes the sexes as far as competency. I was comfortable with the fact that male and female athletic aptitude in certain arenas was going to be different, right? Like a male offensive lineman and a female offensive lineman, there's going to be different strengths there. That's the reason why WNBA and NBA looks very different as the game. I was frustrated when I looked at gender disparities in chess. This was a couple of years ago. The world's greatest female chess master, like obviously she's going to crush the average male, obviously. But when we compare her to the greatest achieving male chess players, in her own words, it was suffocating. I don't like that information, but it is the case. Movies that try to depict women as being on level playing field in all areas as men, I think the reason why the feminist thought leaders don't latch onto them, is because that feeds into what they want to be true about the world. This movie doesn't do that though. This movie is leaning into her femininity while also showing that she's competent in her femininity. She's embracing motherhood. She is using weapons to compensate for the fact that she would very easily be overpowered by these xenomorphs. Whereas the more masculine female characters in the movie, they have a machismo bravado as well. And they're unlikable in that way. They're not leaning into their femininity. I think that's why feminist thought leaders don't tend to reference Alien as much.
This could be a female empowerment movie.
I entirely think it is. Yeah.
No, and that's not why
I dislike it.
Okay.
I dislike it for other reasons. I think those aspects of it are actually where this movie does its best.
Yeah. That was one of the things I had to discuss was
on that topic of that widened bell curve. This is one of the reasons, not the exclusive reason, that if you're a CEO in America, by and large, exceedingly likely that you're male. Some people say, no, that's just gender role preconceptions and male privilege. Okay, that same widened bell curve is also the reason why if you're homeless in America, overwhelmingly likely that you're male. That can't be male privilege. Like that high success rate can't be male privilege if we also have the high failure rate. It's because of that tightened and widened bell curve that falls along gender binary. Now, Jeff, you said you had nothing to add. You laid into my lap a moment to say some very controversial things. So I'm not going to let you get away from this topic without your opinion.
Black Widow is a superhero.
No.
Not that one? Okay.
Why is it that you think that this movie is not heralded as a triumph of a strong female character?
I don't know. Like, This is going to sound super judgmental. Don't take it. Sigourney Weaver, she's not a babe. You know, like, she had a lot of masculine qualities to her. She wasn't feminine physically in any means. There was no part in the movie, again, this may, like, just feel weird saying this, like, she wasn't sexy in any part in this movie. You know,
I think she had more sexiness in the last movie.
I didn't get that either. She's incredibly woman in this movie. Like there's no question. Actually, hold on. Hold that thought. I'm having a thought come back to mind. I thought Eric Voss had talked about how, like, on the screen, it talked about how she had changed her gender.
Hold on.
And again, this is me just trying to come up with, like, maybe why this doesn't, like, she's not your Megan Fox. She's not your Margot Robbie. She's not your other, action-packed Gal Gadot. You know, like, she's not those characters. Like, she doesn't come across sexual. I don't know if that's a part that has to coincide with it being more of a feminist forward, if there's that sexuality that goes with it, or if it's just maybe I just, you know, my preference of, you know, what I find attractive in women is different than what she's presenting as this very strong-willed, dirty, grimy, you know, almost like a auto mechanic type look, just like she's wearing those dirty, grungy military clothes. Like, maybe for me, like, I don't find that appealing, but someone does.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just that aspect of, like, there's times where she's doing things that I forget that she's a female.
Yeah.
Because what she's doing is normally male figures doing. And I, like,
believable.
As believable as this movie is, yes.
It's not her character that's transgender.
Oh, okay. Who was it?
Lambert. And that would have been one of the characters from the movie. The
first movie. Okay.
So this is in the second movie when she's in the court.
And they're going over all the people, the casualties. Okay.
Yeah.
I knew that you talked Lambert's about a character.
Lambert's bio reads, quote, "Subject is Despin, convert at birth, male to female. So far, no indication of suppressed trauma related to gender alteration."
Interesting. Okay. That's all moot then, because it's not talking about Ellen Ripley.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. Like, I love her character. I love Sigourney Weaver. Like I think she's a great actress. I think and this is again coming from Eric Voss and a couple other articles I read, she originally tried out to be Princess Leia.
Oh yeah.
But she didn't get it because, you know, Carrie Fisher and stuff.
Yeah.
I think she's a way better fit for this than she would have been Princess Leia. Princess Leia, very feminine. Very more sexual. And I guess that would be my comparison.
Jabba's palace Leia.
Right. Exactly. Like again, both females, both strong, both leaders, both independent, both taking charge. But, like, I don't know if that's the deciding factor is why, like, I'm not trying to make any declarations or anything or try any definites, but, like, maybe in my opinion, from my observations, what makes one a feminist icon and one that just kind of goes under the radar, she has minimal sexuality in this movie in her character from the two movies we've seen. Now, what she does bring in this movie that she didn't have in the first one is motherhood. She's very much
maternal,
a
maternal instinct. Yeah.
Yes. Very much a mother in this movie.
But I would
say maternal instinct
is very feminine.
Yeah. I would too. Yeah.
Right. But you were going on about how she's not feminine.
All other accounts.
I mean,
again, this is just an observation.
For two men that she doesn't know. That's very feminine.
And the one guy puts cream and sugar in it. Yeah. So just, like, I don't know if that's a good enough answer, but that's just from my observation. Like, it's not a critique on Sigourney Weaver, but
she's not sexy enough that feminist thought leaders haven't latched onto her.
Maybe. Yeah. That's the only thing I can grasp straws, because, like, I still got those feminine, like, we're talking about it now because I brought up the idea, like, I got this feminist power empowerment from her, but at the same time, like, what is the difference between her and these ones where they become icons?
Sure.
Maybe it's the sexuality.
Yeah. I'd also say she's very maternal.
Oh, 100%.
And maternal instinct is something that feminists would prefer to downplay.
Okay. Why is it?
Because, and the Sheologians podcast did a really great discussion and explanation of this, but in a lot of feminist literature, like Scumbag Manifesto, for example, they rightly identify one of the huge differences between the sexes is parental responsibility and the burden that a mother takes on. Like 9 months gestation, nursing, all of that. Women have a physical response to a child crying that men just don't have.
Right.
And so because of this, the feminist thought leaders, again, rightly identified that if we're really going to make ourselves like men, the first thing that has to go is our maternalism, right? And this is why abortion is such a huge...
We really need a female on this episode.
This is why abortion is such a huge issue for them, because if they don't have the right to kill a child in the womb, then they have a burden of child rearing that men don't have in the same regard. Now, you and I would argue that men must be involved in the upbringing of children.
Yeah.
And society actually agrees, which is why we have, for example, men have to pay child support, right? They can't just disappear. They still have to at least financially be involved. And courts are very litigious when it comes to men trying to get away from that. That doesn't stop men from trying to get away from that, but it does, you know, that's part of the whole issue there. It also gives some context to why feminists are so critical of women who choose to be stay-at-home mothers rather than career women. And why, for example, 30 Rock, one of the big themes of that series.
I've not seen those.
Oh, it's such a great series.
But Tina Fey, right?
Yeah, she's excellent in it. One of the big themes of that is this idea of a woman can't have it all. She can't be a successful career woman as well as a mother. One of those is going to give. She so desperately wants to be both. She never becomes a mother in the franchise, I don't think. But that's a recurring theme of can I have it all? Men and women are motivated by different things. A large part of that might only be cultural conditioning. That would be the conjecture of the feminist thought leaders. It might be biological, which would be the conjecture of evolutionary biologists, by the way.
Okay. So yeah, I want to make sure that I feel like I need to reiterate, like, I'm from my perspective as a male and from what I've been through, that was my opinion on why. But like,
yeah.
I can't speak from a woman's perspective of what does and what doesn't make. And I just want to make sure, like, I don't want to say anything that's out of line.
No, I don't.
It's disrespectful to Sigourney Weaver.
I don't think that you should qualify, because here's the thing. Women don't agree. Right? Saying, well, as a woman, I think this, they're like insinuates that all women should think this. As a man, I think this insinuates that all men should think this. And that's bullshit, frankly. It is my opinion, X has nothing to do with the color of my skin, my genitalia, my chromosome makeup, my nation of origin. These are my opinions. You don't need to qualify it with identity politics.
Because I appreciate parts of the feminist movement. Like, I grew up in a house that was predominantly women.
Yep.
I have no brothers. I have four sisters. You know, my mom, like, and like, for me, like, the empowered woman is very important to me.
Oh, I agree.
Like, so like, just like, I just want to make sure, like, I want to make sure I didn't say anything that discredited my, like,
I would argue that the feminist movement largely has been to disempower women.
Yeah. With the way you described some of this. Yeah. I would agree with that, with what you brought to the table here. So,
and that's not a position that I had 6 months ago. Like 6 months ago, if you asked me.
Do you know what changed?
Yeah. The Sheologian podcast. I always considered the first two waves of feminism were necessary and good. And the Sheologians podcast really changed my mind on that with their Feminism Redux, linked below. I know we've talked about it in previous episodes. I can't remember which one it was. We'd love to have them on. They're brilliant. But they really helped me understand the history of it. It's just like, no, it's always been about let's make women like men. And that doesn't empower women. That, if anything, that's misogynistic.
Right. Okay, so that was kind of my first big topic of was the sexuality, the mother theme and idea. And what are some things that you've brought up in this film that are a different subject or Do you have anything else to add, or do you have something else about this film that struck out to you?
Yeah. So a lot of it is just the unbelievable acting. For example, I've never seen an adult so impressed that a woman can operate a forklift.
And she was certified.
Right? It was the some of the.
Now old, remember, this is 100 years. What, 100 years later than us?
Several hundred years into the future.
Yeah. So I mean, like, maybe things have changed.
Yeah, maybe now women can't drive forklifts. Yeah. Bill Paxton's character really insufferable. Game over, man. Game over.
Well, okay. Maybe I need to not watch Eric Voss videos before we record because I want to make sure I'm using my own dome. But he talked on that. Earlier on in the movie, Bill Paxton characters talked. You know, he's asked about, have you ever done this before? He's like, so many simulations.
No, those are different characters.
No, it was Bill Paxton. It was Bill Paxton's character because he connected it to, at the end, he's like, game over. He was connecting to, like, yeah, almost every other time he's done this, he just turned the computer off.
Nope.
It was the same character.
Nope. It's not the same character. It was Lieutenant Gorman.
Then are you thinking about Bill Paxton in a different area then? Because Bill Paxton is the one that definitely says game over.
Yeah.
He's definitely the one that talks about his flight, his simulation.
No, Lieutenant Gorman, they said, how many jumps have you done? And he said, 80-some simulations. They're all pissed off because their commanding officer has only ever done 2 combat jumps, including the one they're doing. And while he's talking about that, Bill Paxton's character is pacing back and forth, talking about how great they are and how awesome they are. No, the video you watched, that he got that wrong. That's a different character says that.
Okay. Yep. Excuse me.
I did find that character, though, Lieutenant Gorman, insufferable for different reasons, right? He wants to be all by the book and stuff. He instructs them not to use ballistics because it could cause an explosion.
In that one hallway.
In that one hallway.
Not in the whole scenario.
No.
They're with a bunch of.
So Ridley points it out. Yeah. They discuss it like, oh, that's a good point. I'll let them know. He says, don't use it. Don't use grenades. I'm like, why? And he's like, just don't. Now, it ends up being irrelevant, but we do see 2 of the characters using, like, they sneak their ballistic cartridges anyway. He should have just said, because you're in X hallway and blah, blah, blah. It would have taken him 2 seconds to explain. By the time they had finished collecting the rounds, they would all understand. Like, that's bad leadership. I don't know, it was, like, lazy writing, too, like. The whole conversation that they had could have been on live mics and everybody could have heard it. Like, you could have done it 20 different ways. I found a lot of these characters absolutely insufferable.
Any other themes or biases you came across?
No, the biggest one is motherhood.
Okay.
We
solved motherhood, guys. We
already thoroughly discussed that.
Yeah.
But Newt, again, like, I didn't care if she lived or died.
I definitely cared if she lived.
Oh, actually, here's something. And this is about prejudice, really. When Ridley realizes that, what's his name, is a artificial intelligence, a synthetic human. She's like, I've had a bad experience. I don't want anything to do with it. And I think that there's a really interesting race relations conversation to be had there. Right? She had one bad experience with somebody like that. And now she's like, you stay far away from me. It's pretty accurate to what drives prejudice.
Trauma.
Yeah. Not exclusively.
No.
In fact, a lot of prejudice is a learned behavior. But
from generational trauma.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't excuse or justify the behavior. It does contextualize it. And as much as he can feel emotions, it's clear that he is hurt by this. One of the things he says is, I cannot injure a human being or through an action allow a human being to come to harm. Do you know what that's a quote of?
No.
So that's from Isaac Asimov's 3 Laws of Robotics. So Isaac Asimov.
So even robots have laws. Good. Good to know.
Well, actually, robots have more laws. They're all programming. Isaac Asimov has written a ton of science fiction. That's what he's really best known for. American writer, professor of biochemistry at Boston University. iRobot is probably the one that's the best known of
his. Will Smith, Shia LaBeouf.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The 3 laws of robotics are...
And these are fictional laws?
So the 3 laws of robotics are a set of rules devised by Isaac Asimov, which were to be followed by robots in several of his stories.
Okay.
Basically, it was his idea of, like, if we're going to have artificial intelligence humanoids, these are some of the things that would have to govern them for them to work, and here's how they might break apart. Basically, he was trying to think ahead using science fiction to be like, how do we make this ironclad so that AI doesn't destroy the human race a la Ultron?
James Spader.
Yep. So the first law, a robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. Does that sound familiar, Jeff?
Nope, not at all.
Second law, a robot must obey the orders given it by human beings except where such orders would conflict with the first law. Okay, so robots would never be able to be used for warfare, for example.
These are all in artificial or a iRobot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that, because I'm getting.
And the third law, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law.
Yeah, these are in iRobot. I remember that.
And Ultron is the thought behind that was, what if Tony Stark wasn't smart enough to think that far ahead? Because that's pretty much every Tony Stark problem. Is what kind of problems would Tony Stark make for himself if he wasn't as smart as he was competent?
Well, his superhero coworkers like Black Widow and Hawkeye, they would come in and help. But anyways.
So yeah, I thought it was really interesting that he basically quotes Isaac Asimov's first law of robotics. I cannot injure a human being or through an action allow a human being to come to harm.
Was there a question in that?
No.
Oh, okay.
Just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Now, go back to the whole prejudice thing you were saying, though, right before. I do, and this is going to be a little bit more broader, but like, I do believe hate is something that's learned, not instinctual, for the most part. Like, we are humans with a sin nature, so like, obviously, we do have that, the ability to make incorrect choices and choose selfishly, choose, you know, let our pride win and stuff like that. But in general, I believe our preconceived hatreds, our biases, preferences does come from how we are raised. The roots of all those things come from
or things we've experienced personally.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So like now it is I have a hard time being abstract. Like for this movie specifically, I have a hard time comparing AI hatred towards like comparing that to like hatreds towards a group of humanoid people.
It's easier in this than it is in Star Wars.
Correct.
Because in this, at least they look human.
Right.
In Star Wars, it still looks like a droid.
Right. Right. Like up until the fact that they acknowledged him as a droid, then it's like easy to go like, oh, he's just one of us. But the moment they put that AI label on him, I'm like, okay, he's just a robot. Like someone made him. But in general, but
spoiler, Jeff, so someone made you.
Two people did. Yeah. So getting beyond that, that little bit of that hard little brick wall for me to get past in this specific movie, I do think that this is something that's touched on quite a bit in this movie. Is this idea of different people, different, the haves and the have nots making the rules for the other people, essentially go like, we can make this call because you don't there's something to be said, like just devil's advocate here. Like were the humans at fault at some point for destroying a creature that was just trying to like, is there other ways like the xenomorph essentially so I'm on the defense stand for the xenomorph right now. Like would there have been another way to, obviously it would have been made for a terrible movie. Can they live happily together rather than having to exterminate a whole species? So this movie does talk about trauma and like in Ripley's fear of AIs just because of her one experience. Now, granted, her one experience was definitely life altering. She literally lost all of her crew, and to wake up 57 years later because of that exact same situation. Like, say her trauma is to be justified, but again, I think there's stuff to work through, not just immediately go recoil and go bad. But in that same sense, if we're talking about hatreds towards a species or a person's in that subject, that would translate to the xenomorphs too. We acknowledge at the beginning of this movie, the xenomorphs were not the bad guys in this film. The humans were. Now, xenomorphs are monsters, but like they weren't necessarily like, it's like there's kind of like two different paths of storyline going on with those two. I'm trying to put my words to make sense. Like, you get what I'm trying to say?
So I think the difference here, and maybe in later movies, they take a different route. Xenomorphs are incredibly intelligent creatures, but they're not like humanoid intelligence.
Right.
They're not rational beings.
They're not. They don't procreate.
They do.
They're not biological.
They are.
The AIs are biological. AI can
xenomorphs.
Okay, you said the art. Okay, sorry.
Did I?
Yeah.
I apologize.
Okay, you're talking about the xenomorphs. Okay, now I'm caught up. Okay.
Yeah, the xenomorphs.
Yeah, they definitely procreate. Yeah,
they procreate, but they're animal. They're intelligent beings, but they are not humanoid intelligence. They're not rational beings.
Right.
We've never talked about this before, and that's largely because I don't understand it well enough to really make a strong case for it. So I'm only going to talk about it a little bit. Hans Hermann Hoppe has this...
That's an unfortunate name.
It's a great name. He's still alive. Careful what you say. Hans Hermann Hoppe has...
Please come on.
I'd love to have him. Has a theory that he developed in 1988 called argumentation ethics. One of the first principles of it is that the fact that I try to convince you rather than just coerce you with violence shows that I believe you are a thinking, rational being who is capable of being convinced and that you have a mind that you are the owner of. It's like a property rights of intelligence, basically.
Oh.
And when you resort to violence immediately without first trying to convince, that's because you don't think that they are rational beings. Actually, going back to Godfather trilogy, one of the big things in the Godfather trilogy, Don Corleone is a man of reason. And when he determines that you can't be reasoned with, that's when he leverages violence. Mm. The xenomorphs are not creatures of reason, or if they are, they don't consider humans creatures of reason. And as a result, they can't be reasoned with, and so their violence has to be met with violence. They, in every single situation, they initiate violence.
The xenomorphs do?
Yeah. But with the AI, they're pure reason.
Okay. Okay. No, I get that. Yeah, I get. And I definitely wouldn't put the xenomorphs in a class of humans or
Yeah.
It was just interesting. Like, you do see them pro removal of one species, but then you do, and then you were just, yeah. So just, yeah, I just wanted to pick your brain on that because that makes sense.
So that's why when you say, could peace have been found with them? No. And that's kind of what Ripley determined.
Have you ever seen the movie? It's the whole human and aliens interaction. It's Amy Adams. It's Amy Adams. Arrival. Thank you, Lindsay. Lindsay's in the studio this evening.
I think I've seen it once.
So it's been a while since I've seen it. She's someone who studies language.
Yeah.
Not just English, but the study of different languages.
Does she climb into a pod in that?
She communicates. She finds out that these aliens that have arrived are communicating. So I guess this would agree with what you were saying then. She found a way to reason with them versus them just being violence to violence. Okay, so that makes sense. Okay. I had to say that as another movie. It's literally just about the communication between aliens and humans done in a very dramatic, suspenseful way. It's a great movie. Arrival's a great movie. Maybe on the top?
No.
No? Nope. Man, that's a bummer. It's a great movie.
Has it ever been?
You'll find out because you've got that easier access.
It was.
Really?
Yeah.
2016.
Pulling it up now.
Denis Villeneuve, the Dune guy. The guy that's doing Dune. I can't say his last name. So he directed that. Jeremy Renner, Forest Whitaker, Amy Adams. It's a great movie. But it's about a linguistics person who learns to communicate with these aliens through lines and symbols and stuff, and it's just fascinating. But yeah, so that would go along with what you're saying though, that ability to reason versus no reason. So
that's right.
That makes sense. Well, if you're listening and you're part of our Patreon and you want us to talk about that movie, vote it in our movie submissions for Off 250, and maybe we'll talk about it someday.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else, Nelson? Ripley had a line talking to Burke.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to censor myself here. You know, Burke, I don't know which species is worse. You don't see them effing each other over a GD percentage. referring to the animals versus how the humans are acting on trying to survive and just expand their land and and grow their science and their studies and stuff.
Yeah.
I found that fascinating.
I think that that's a really stupid line.
Of course you do.
Is it true that what Burke did was evil and all over percentage? 100%. But let's put in context what that percent means to him. That percentage to him means his future, which is his chances of reproducing, leaving a legacy. If anything, the xenomorphs are far more ruthless for that 1%. I understand that without him, this movie doesn't happen. The story doesn't happen.
Right. It'd be a very boring movie without him.
And here's the thing. Eventually, the colonists probably would have stumbled on it. Eventually.
Right. It's safe to say it's inevitable.
Right.
That was going to be... But the first movie would be the last we'd ever see.
But Burke is the catalyst for this. His hubris caused the death of hundreds. But the line of, they don't screw each other over for a percentage. No, they're screwing you over for a percentage. They're still slaughtering people for their own future, for their benefits, ambitions. Yeah. For their ambitions. It's more animalistic. And so you might argue that it's that what Burke did is more cruel. But I don't know. That line just doesn't hold up under scrutiny.
I thought it was fun. Like it was a line that stuck out to me.
Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. What she intends to do to Burke, which is to ruin his name, hold him accountable for the deaths of hundreds, that's justice. I think that's great.
Right. Rather than him getting away with it or it going unknown exactly how he acted and treated his fellow troops.
Exactly. So, what he did was evil, destructive, no appreciation for human life and liberty. But the state of the line just doesn't hold up to scrutiny. Mm. I will say the court scene at the ending, at the beginning, like that tribunal.
Rooting around the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Given the information that they had, and we see throughout the course of the movie that they truly did believe that there was nothing there because Burke sent them to see. And he sends them to see after the tribunal. So given the information that court actually had, what they did was justice. Because as far as they can tell, you know, we've had people on that rock for 20 years, nothing's happened. As far as we can tell from all of our information, you're a crazy person who destroyed our property and is responsible for the death of however many people.
Again, it makes for a good movie, but I struggle with that because...
What really frustrated with me with this movie, I think, especially because after this scene, what I really wanted to see with this movie, I wanted, were the xenomorphs real, to be something that wasn't resolved until like 3/4 of the way through the movie. I wanted this to like part of it be like her like...
Yeah.
Did I imagine all of this? What really happened? No,
it literally went from that scene to just a couple scenes later of them like, hey, they think they encountered something. We need you because now we need your expertise on this subject.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was, they flipped really quick.
Yeah.
Very quickly. And it was not dramatic at all or not even like realistic in the way they would have handled their, I don't want to say apologetics, but just their way of like going around like, well, actually we think like there was none of that. It was just, hey, do you want to go?
I was expecting like a slow burn, with mess that. With your head. Did she
psychological
imagine?
Psychological stuff. Yeah. That would have been great. I would have appreciated that.
Yeah.
Then that would have been believable.
Yeah. Wrap up questions?
Yeah, I'm just checking to make sure I don't have any other notes here. Just a loose question here or just a soft, like, did you think this movie was scarier than the first one?
No, I thought it was cartoonishly not scary.
Oh man, I'm bummed that this wasn't as enjoyable for you. Again, I'm not speaking highly of this movie. I'm happy I enjoyed it more than the first one.
The first movie had tension. I didn't feel any tension in this movie.
I felt it in this one.
That
scene
was
with
just
the eggs,
an action movie.
That scene with the eggs, and then up until the robot scene where she's in that uniform and they're fighting, I did like the way it dropped out of the spaceship right at the end of the movie where it came out. Like, I thought that was cool.
That was just...
It had been done before.
It was just...
It was nothing new, but it looked cool. And when he rose up out of the water, he or she rose up out of the water. Like,
this movie had
really cool shots.
This
I
movie
really
has the same problem that we talked about with the Godfather trilogy that I saw with the Jurassic Park trilogy. And it's
repetition.
It's the Fast and Furious franchise. It's each movie is just jumping the shark more than the last one.
Yeah.
Just instead of changing the stakes... It's just like, hey, remember what we did last time? We're going to do that, but more.
Same stakes, just more of it.
Yeah.
Not just one,
and
lots of
them. And turning it into a psychological thriller of was the alien even real? We have no history of it. That was 20 years ago. So that was 60 years ago. And for the last 20 years, people lived there. Like, right. They could have done something really cool there.
Right.
And
it had the chance of that.
Yeah.
Because that
I thought whole, that's what they were setting
the
up.
Whole like, dream the, scene. Mm-hmm. When she had the dream and then she had the
yeah.
chest.
Yeah.
The thing coming out of the chest. I was like, oh, this is good.
After that line of, there's been colonists there for 20 years. I was like, I really like where they're going with this.
And it completely flipped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like up that. Until
I,
that point,
I agree with you on that.
I was with them. I was like, this is really interesting. Yeah. Like I have one of the notes here. I was like, you wake up, it's been 60 years. All your family died of old age. You have to get a tiny apartment and a minimum wage job. And maybe everything that happened before you fell asleep was a dream. And you killed a bunch of people. Like that is an interesting concept.
You're bummed.
I was bummed.
You're bummed. I get that. Okay. We'll answer these questions with our wrap-up questions.
Yeah.
You got no other points?
Nah, got nothing else.
Let's end this. Let's bring this boat home, honey.
Let's land this ship.
Yeah, let's sink this.
Let's blow this popsicle stand.
Would you recommend this?
No.
No. It was an enjoyable
watch. I don't remember if I said I'd recommend the first one. I would recommend it before I recommend this one. And I would not, I would.
You're very avid about this. This movie got you fired up. Mm-hmm. I was entertained. I don't know if this would be the first sci-fi thriller I recommend. If it comes up in conversation, I would definitely acknowledge I've seen it. I definitely acknowledge that I enjoyed my time with it. I wouldn't go back to it. But I wouldn't argue someone out of watching it, which I think you would. I feel like your opinion is you would tell them not to watch it.
Yep.
But I wouldn't argue.
And not even it'll make the first movie worse for you kind of way. You're going to waste 2 hours.
Mm. I'm curious to know what my opinion will be once I start going into more of this franchise stuff. Because I am eventually going to watch these. I won't bring it up in conversation, but if someone brings it up, I'll say, yeah, you should watch it. How's it going?
Which of the Predator movies is Chris Hansen in?
I don't... Hold on. Chris Hansen. Do I know... Why does that name sound familiar? Why should I know that name?
Google Chris Hansen.
I am.
He had the show To Catch a Predator.
Oh... would you change the rating? It's rated R.
I would make it PG-13 and take out the stuff that made it R. It didn't need to be in there.
There was a lot of F words.
Yeah, it didn't need to be.
They could have tamed the language down. I didn't add anything
to the movie.
There was a lot more alien mutilation than there was human mutilation in this movie. Yeah, this would work well as a PG-13 movie.
The half torso being blown across.
That was awesome.
Was great. That was excellent.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Maybe the most graphic thing in this movie was that part.
That was cool. It was really well done.
Has it aged well?
No.
Again, I'm neutral. Like I wasn't disappointed about, I mean, again, some of the green screen stuff did not look great.
That didn't
But
well.
I appreciated the practical effects.
Yeah.
Like that stuff looked really good. Just for reference, this movie came out in 1986. Oh, I just want to give you a couple of movies that we've done in previous episodes that came around the same time. 1988, 2 years later, was Die Hard. 1987 was Full Metal Jacket.
Had all three of the original trilogy Star Wars come out?
Yeah, all three are out. Yeah. All three Star Wars are out at this point.
And I think all three of them have aged way better than this did.
Yeah. Especially for some of the space scenes specifically.
Yep.
Yeah. Star Wars did those space scenes way better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. Outside of those, I liked the practical effects. I liked the way the Xenomorphs looked. I've never watched the movie Dune. I played the game a while ago, went like the original Xbox, you know, that first-person shooter with it's a scary shooter.
Doom?
Dune. Doom, D-O-O-M.
Okay.
Doom. Did I say something else?
I thought you had said Dune, D-U-N-E.
Okay. Doom, D-O-O-M.
Okay.
The movie's
based on the game.
Correct, yeah. I got a lot of those vibes of like you know, you're on a spaceship. All you're seeing is the red emergency lights. It's dark everywhere else. There's a cool vibe that comes from that. Like that's an intense vibe. You got the smoke coming in from the machines. And then the stuff moving in the shadows. Like, I appreciate that, but I think it's been done better somewhere, other places.
Sure.
I picked up a lot of things that maybe Doom pulled from Alien, because this predates Doom.
But the first Doom game, Doom is like the most ported game.
What do you mean by ported?
So like the very first Doom game came out in 1993.
Okay, so 7 years later.
And basically, it has been brought to every single device that can handle it. Like, people have ported it to the Samsung fridges.
Wait, the first Doom
mm-hmm.
is being played on modern devices?
Basically everything, yeah.
Why is that? It's probably still, at that time, it's probably 8-bit.
Because, right?
Like,
it's one of the
graphics
first,
aren't great.
It's like, one of the first with 3D graphics.
Okay.
And
it's probably like Duke Nukem type graphics. The very boxy.
Yeah. It's got a very specific, iconic look to it. And basically, it's just because it, because of how little it needs to work, it can run on just about anything. Like, there's people that have, I think I've seen.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm looking at pictures now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's been ported to just about everything.
Man, games have come a long way.
Yeah.
Back to the questions. Would this be in your personal top 250?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
100%.
Top 10. Top 10. No. I don't think this is going to eventually make the cut.
No.
It's in the bottom half for me.
Gave it 3.5 out of 5 stars.
Yeah. 7 out of 10 on IMDb. Yeah. Because here's my reason why. So I put it above Godfather Part 3, above the On the Waterfront, above Das Boot.
I would rather see Godfather Part 3 again than watch this.
I'd watch this in a heartbeat. I put this just under Psycho. I'd rather watch Psycho than this. It's under Full Metal Jacket. It's under Schindler's List. It's under Godfather Part 2. Like, it's not high on my list.
Yeah.
The way I rate my movies is, what movies would I watch before watching, going back to this one?
Sure.
And I would watch Psycho, Full Metal Jacket, Schindler's List, Godfather Part 2, all before I watched Aliens again. But I'd watch Aliens before I watched Godfather Part 3, Paths of Glory, Citizen Kane, Exorcist, Alien, Metropolis, Clockwork Orange. All those are below. I don't know if I need to start adjusting my rating scale. Because on IMDb, we talked about this a little bit. On IMDb, it's a scale out of 10 stars. Letterboxd is 5. So for my Letterboxd rating, I split the difference. And they're comparable. All of my ratings are the same.
Of the 40 movies we've covered so far, including this one.
Yeah, 41.
41 if you include our off to 50.
Absolutely.
My lowest ranked so far, excluding this one, it would be The Exorcist, followed by Alien, followed by Inside Out.
And what did you give them?
I gave The Exorcist 1.
Out of 10.
Out of 2. Wow, Exorcist got 2 stars. Alien got 4 stars. Inside Out got 5 stars. I would give this a 0.5 star. I would rather watch The Exorcist than watch
my lowest this. Movie is A Clockwork Orange, and it's 5 stars. The reason being is, like, I didn't like it, but through our discussion, I see why people like it. I wouldn't watch it again, but I'm not going to give it the lowest of the low. Even though I hated it, I'll never watch it again.
Clockwork Orange has 7 for me.
I still see the value in it. And there's no movie that I've watched that I would put under Clockwork Orange.
This one I'm probably going to give this a 0.5 star to 1 star. I do not like it.
Really harsh.
I really don't. Yeah.
And it's just for entertainment purposes. Like, it's just strictly came down to, like,
Yeah.
Outside of the mother thing, it had minimal life-changing, altering things.
I think if they'd gone psychological thriller, this movie had so much more potential.
You're a tough critic, man.
Yeah. You say I'm a tough critic, but I also gave, like, The Hobbit, like, 4 stars out of 5.
I would too.
Like, that's got some problems.
There's a big loyalty to the fan base there, which I agree with. But again, I don't ever want to be considered a movie critic.
No.
Like, I don't want to get to the point where I'm tearing stuff apart for tearing apart
scene. No.
Like,
no.
And so for me, like, and that's why, like, right now, with my lowest movie being a 5 star out of 10, I still see why. I get why that movie's on the top 250.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I have to enjoy it. So I'm not going to give it a 1 just because I personally didn't like it. I'm still rating it on, like, what's the value outside of my opinions? Outside of Jeff's opinions, are very small.
No, my ratings
very
are
thin.
My ratings are exclusively, what do I think of this?
Fair enough.
Has nothing to do. Like,
it's
this
so
is
fascinating.
My opinion.
This movie was very entertaining, and it's at the bottom of your list.
I didn't That's find incredible. It entertaining at all. It was a struggle for me to get through this movie.
That's fascinating. More so than Lawrence of Arabia. That movie was so dry.
That movie was That movie was difficult for different reasons, and I found more value in it. I found it to be a more beautiful movie, more interesting story, more compelling. I
wish we were more alike. It would make for a better podcast.
We just agreed on everything.
I know. Why couldn't we just last question.
Let's move on.
Why do you think this movie is on the top 250? You go first.
I honestly do not know.
I need an answer. You made me answer the feminist thing. So why, if you had to put one on it, why would you think this has maintained its longevity on the top 250?
Rabid fan base.
Elaborate. Do you think it's because of the growing, the universe that they've added to it? Do you think them adding to movies?
I know it is. Because every time they've added a movie, it's jumped up in
the... But then let me continue to pick your brain.
And it'll fall a bit, and then a new movie... And the franchise is coming out, it pops up again.
And I'm not arguing for it to stay on, because again, this wouldn't make my top 250. I also don't quite understand, but just to pick your brain here, if you see this trend of it moving when other movies in the universe come out, but somehow those ones never make it on the top 250, and this one continues to stay, and not only stay, move up and move down, what do you think the difference is? Why do people adhere and hold to this one? Now, technology's gotten better, story writing's gotten better, multiple different directors. Like we haven't seen these other movies, but I think it's safe to assume that some of these I'm probably going to like more than the two Alien movies we've watched. What do you think the difference is? Is it just strictly the fan base?
Yeah. Whenever it jumps up, it's not people changing their reviews. It's more people adding reviews that weren't there before.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. So people like, oh, there's a new Alien coming out. I should go watch those.
And then update their IMDb account.
Yeah. And I think that's it. Okay. I think that's all there is to it. I think it's like, oh, this is so fun, shooter popcorn flick. But no, it's a garbage movie.
Okay.
Everything Everywhere All at Once deserves to be in the top 250 way more than this does.
That one's higher on the list for me. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And it's not on the top 250.
No. All right. Next.
Why do you think?
Sigourney Weaver did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah. And Paul Reiser as well.
I'm going to start with that. Sigourney Weaver was incredible.
Yeah.
She's definitely the life force of this movie. I can't think of any other actress.
I would give the villain, Paul Reiser, I'd put him on equal footing with her.
No, not equal. Absolutely not.
I think the two.
For the franchise?
No, for this movie.
For this movie, no.
The two of them carried this movie.
Him right behind her. Her 51, him 46. Okay.
Behind every strong leading lady.
Stop it. So the number one thing for me would be Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
I think. She did great. I mean, I know earlier on in the episode, I talked about how I questioned, like, she was a different type of female lead than what we see today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, she was atypical to what modernized women lead are these days, even in action flicks. Even the Fast and Furious, like, you get these characters that are sexualized on the hoods of cars and stuff. Like Vin Diesel. Yeah. Like,
Paul Walker.
Yeah, absolutely. Ludacris, like, in their bikinis and stuff. Like, 100%. There's more sexuality to it, which I don't necessarily need, but I see more of. In this movie, I actually appreciated how they can show motherhood and not once have to depict a sensuality of that. There was never once a hookup in this movie outside of the, you know, the face huggers hooking up with the, you know, that happened. This wasn't a sexual movie,
no.
But yet somehow we had this strong female, and Sigourney Weaver did a great job with that.
Yeah, and ironically, all the reasons that you and I see this as a strong female character, feminist icon, all of those reasons are the same reasons why the feminist thought leaders haven't latched onto this movie.
Yeah, and I get that. I get that.
It's like ironic.
I'm not a fan of these two movies together so far. This isn't a series that I'm excited to watch more of.
Now, it's not to say that if you look for it, you won't find the people saying that it is.
Correct.
It's just like zeitgeist wise.
Right. But in general, if now that I've watched this in the previous movie, if this conversation comes up, whether it's talking with friends, you and I talking again, like her image is going to come up in my head. Her in the elevator with the two guns taped together. That was just awesome. There's moments in this movie that I find iconic. Not for me specifically, but I can understand why they've stood the test of time. And for that, I can see why it's on the 250. I don't necessarily think it should be there. I think it comes down to Sigourney Weaver. I think she's the reason this is upholding.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Yeah.
Next week, Coco.
Yeah. Wrapping up Scary Movie Month with a Mexican skeleton, Sarah Taylor.
She's back. No, well, Sarah Taylor's back. Neck the Mexican skeleton. We haven't, he's not been on yet.
No. No.
Our picks
that's a,
are.
That's a callback joke to when we had
correct.
Her.
Go listen to that episode, Inside Out.
Linked below.
It's our second Pixar movie that we've done.
Is it?
Yeah, we've only done two. Check out our Patreon. Check out the links in the notes. Yeah. Hit up some merch. Remember,
your support makes this project viable and allows us to grow into some other things that we'd like to do with this project.
We have some big goals. Things that we're holding close to our chest right now that we don't want to reveal everything yet, but we can't do without your support.
Officially licensed handguns.
Yeah. With Jeff's face on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we have an exclusive merch that we're running now through the end of the year.
Thanks, Cassie, for that. It's a really great Jeff and I in the style of Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, so that'll be thrown in the vault come the end of the year. Make sure you grab that before that runs out. We do have some other merch that's available year round.
That's right.
But just make sure
are looking to do other exclusives in the future. In fact, if you have an artistic bent and you want to pitch us some stuff, silverscreenbiases@gmail.com. Don't worry, we're not going to steal your art that you send us. If you send us something and we think it's worth slap it on some merchandise, you we'll cut you in on that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think I've got anything else. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else?
No.
All right. Hey, thank you for listening to this. This was an interesting conversation. This took some turns. I appreciated it. Nelson got fired up for his hatred for this movie.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed it, hope you see you back next week with Sarah Taylor. Yeah. See you around.
And we
are
gone.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did.
If you have found value in what we discussed today, please consider leaving us a rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
If you have any feedback or suggestions, we would love to hear from you.
That's right. Tell us why we're wrong.
If you want even more content and ways to engage with us and each other, check out our Patreon page.
By supporting us there, you'll get access to exclusive bonus content and help us continue to create high quality episodes, as well as help pay for our future plans. Links to our social media, merchandise, and Patreon are in the show notes.